beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
Hello and welcome to another episode. It's our Christmas episode, if you can't tell from the music. And we are, it's the Right Side Podcast for December 8th, 2018. It's our last of 2018. So maybe we'll be talking about our New Year's resolutions, or maybe we'll just save that if, or even if we're going to do them, because I don't know, it seems a little bit foolhardy when you're an adult to have these big grandiose New Year's resolutions. They're quaint to talk about. But as ever, I'm here with Kim Ross. How are you?
I am fantastic this morning, and I can't believe it's our last episode of the year.
I know. It's gone by so, so fast. But in order to ring in the Christmas season, we have the Queen of Christmas herself with sirens in the background from New York City. We've got Sarah Quinlan. How are you, Sarah?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Kim,
and wait,
before
can you really hear the sirens?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
We can.
No, but you know what? It'll make people, anyone who listens to the commentary podcast, will feel at home because, they frequently have, the New York City sirens in the background of their podcast as well. So it's always
the
kind of.
The funny thing is, I didn't even hear them until you mentioned it. And I was like, oh yeah, there are sirens.
You've drowned them out.
You're just so used to it. You're just so used to it.
Yikes.
Kim, before we start, do you want to tell everybody where they can find us and what they should go and do?
Well, yes, you should definitely subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You can just look up the name of our show, which is The Right Side with Andrea and Kim. You can also find that through our website, which is therightside.us. You can just click on the subscribe on iTunes and it will take you there. And when you subscribe, because I know that you will, you need to leave, excuse me, it's kind of still early morning and I just got my coffee. You'll need to leave a review, and that review should include 5 stars because we are worth 5 stars. We might be even worth 6 out of 5 stars because that's how fantastic the show is. And it's our favorite number, right, Andrea?
Absolutely. But okay. So anyway, so we are going to talk about Christmas things, but because this is a political podcast for the most part, unless, except for when Kim and I decide it's not, we are going to, so we kind of got into a conversation, with just, red state people. You know, we all write at Red State and, have our, you know, our internal email threads, but we were talking about how slow, and I'm sure that everybody, even if, whether or not you write about news or commentary or anything like that, it always seemed like the news cycle, at least, and I'm, this is a working theory of mine, the news cycle tends to get a little bit, in my opinion, contrived of things to talk about. Content is slow. There's relatively little going on, except, you know, we've got President Trump now. So the tweeting is always, especially in the last 24 hours, has been three fire emojis, as far as the lit part goes. Yeah. It's been where he went after his former Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson. So we've had all of that, but I propose to you guys that I have a working theory that because of that is why we, in the, at least in the advent of the, you know, 24 hour news cycle, that we've had kind of things like the war on Christmas come into being, and we argue about whether that's real or not every year. We also get lots of, you know, the super hot takes of, you know, just anything. Like this year we had, and I believe this first came up with BuzzFeed in like 2014, and then it was resurrected last year, and now it's come back again, where people kind of like say, you know, the movie, the stop action movie and Christmas classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, is problematic because he's bullied and things like that. So I just wanted to, Sarah, I know, you know, it's like we all have kind of different opinions on what how these things come about, and we kind of live in a time where we're always talking about, oh, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. And of course, and I mentioned to you guys that, and anyone who's watched a Barbie movie would see that the main focus of a Barbie movie is basically like a Rudolph, like the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Barbie is always treated poorly and bullied and until she saves the day. And so that was kind of what the Huffington Post put out in one article, that kind of, I saw it as trolling the right, like that. The article that the Huffington Post put out, I was like, okay, this is just a, like, I would sit back. If I was going to be writing something to troll conservatives or the right or non, you know, kind of the social justice warrior, quote unquote, people with, I would put this out there and just watch them react to it, which is why I said relatively little about it, because I was like, come on, let's not just go off and be triggered all the time doing what we always say the other side does. So Sarah, right. I know that, so that you kind of like have, just give me your overall perspective. Do you think that that's just kind of for trolling purposes? And then I know that, you know, you kind of do think that some of these things are have problems inherently in them.
Yes. So I have had a lot of thoughts since you brought this up. And I've never actually thought about it in terms of like December is typically a slow month for news, but I do think your point is completely valid. Like in, especially the last few years, I've realized that people being bored can be kind of dangerous because they look for any ways to entertain themselves. And in our hyper political environment, the easiest way to entertain yourself is basically to piss off people who disagree with you. And it's also an easy way to get clicks and attention. So I do think you're onto something there. But then on the flip side, I'm probably more like a social justice warrior than either of you two are. So I am okay with having these discussions. I just think that with the internet, it turns into like a giant game of telephone where like the end result is that the original point is like, mm-hmm. if it started off like in good faith, by the end of it, it's not in good faith anymore. And the original point is totally lost amid confusion and outrage and everybody commenting on it.
And everyone is Hitler, yeah.
Yeah, everyone just assuming the worst and, like, saying things just to make people angry. But I do think it's a good thing to have these kinds of discussions about, like, Rudolph or, you know, Baby It's Cold Outside. That comes up every year, too. Mm-hmm. And, like, I remember being a kid and thinking, like, Rudolph is, like, a really bad story because, like, the reindeer just bully him until he has something they want, and Santa doesn't step in to stop bullying among, I mean, the reindeer, but the adult doesn't step in to stop it. And even as a kid, I did think that wasn't a great message. But it, I mean, just that it turns into like who can be the most outraged. So,
yeah, well, you bring, so I always, you know, Baby It's Cold Outside, I always kind of sit back and say, like, oh, it's a cute song. And I do, like, I do see, if you really look at the lyrics, it is kind of like, there's no excuse for it, right? I mean, it's a conversation, yeah, back and forth. I think what is lost, though, the song was written by the guy who wrote Guys and the, you know, music for Guys and Dolls and things like that. I think Baby It's Cold Outside gets lost when you are just listening it to its soul. It loses its context of seeing it performed on a stage, right? Between two people where there's a context of what's being said and what's going on. And I think that maybe that gets kind of lost in it, where you're just sitting down and just looking at the words. I mean, you could sit down and look at some of your favorite songs and be like, right, that's pretty messed up, you know? I mean, everyone who knows Sarah knows she loves Taylor Swift. I mean, I love Taylor Swift. But if you sat down and looked at some of her lyrics to some of her songs, you'd be like, right, you are a crazy person. But, you know, so I mean, we all kind of, songs, looking at lyrics to songs alone kind of, and I don't want to ever lose that context of what's going on, and that there is a dynamic there. You know, kind of on the stage version, when you do watch it, it's like you understand that the woman kind of, you know, that there's an interaction in a play, that she keeps saying this, but then she doesn't just walk out and leave, you know, kind of thing. And it's a back and forth. And I think that's where I think that context and that teaching our kids, like, hey, there is, and I think that having these conversations are good as well. I think that writing things off as, oh, we shouldn't talk about that, just goes into, yes, the whole idea of, oh, we should just leave everything out of anything, and that's just ridiculous, and poo-pooing it and not engaging anyone in kind of, and like you said, just a game of telephone. Oh, that person just thinks this. But Kim, what do you think about all of this stuff?
Yes, I would say I'm kind of in the middle. I don't necessarily feel like jumping in to the discussions that everyone seems to be having every Christmas about the songs or the movies. I also think that just because something is a tradition and something we've had for several decades, we shouldn't automatically just give it a pass. Maybe it was acceptable at the time, but perhaps it's okay to kind of step back a little bit and say, well, you know, maybe this is problematic and it doesn't need to be promoted as much as it is. But again, it seems people go a little too far sometimes on both sides to defend it, or, you know, say it's the worst thing ever. I would say when it comes to Christmas, the thing that gets me the most annoyed, and it probably shouldn't, this should also just be another thing that doesn't bother me very much, but especially since Trump has been in office, and even in recent years right before he was in office, the idea that there is this huge cultural war on Christmas and that Trump either saved it or he's going to save it, or by saying happy holidays we've completely ruined everything, or by saying something like season's greetings also that's a problem and ruining Christmas as well. When it comes to Christmas, everyone has their own traditions. Some people celebrate, some people don't. But if you're an actual Christian who celebrates Christmas as Christ's birth, if you're looking to someone, a politician, a celebrity of some sort, if you're looking to them to either save or ruin this holiday that you've had for many years, you are doing it wrong. You really are. Trump did not save Christmas. No one will, like, who's a celebrity or a politician. Obama did not ruin Christmas. My Christmases have been exactly the same, no matter who is in office. And for everyone to, like, be falling all over themselves, like, I've seen a Facebook people saying, well, I'm so glad to have a president who says Merry Christmas. Well, that's fine. But I also don't think Happy Holidays is that bad. I mean, I interchange the two throughout the season. And I would say that that's my number one annoyance during the holidays, especially in recent years, how if this cup at Starbucks looks a certain way, oh my gosh, they're not celebrating Christmas how I do. Well, that's fine. They're a company. They can make their own decisions. And Trump is not saving Christmas, just like Obama did not ruin it. People, calm down. Have some eggnog.
Well, my Christmas is worse, based on the fact that I'm getting at least one or two text messages a week talking about how I can, don't miss my opportunity to get an ornament at the White House, on the White House, Christmas tree. So that is, and I actually did.
A Trumpy bear and put him under the tree.
Yeah, I did. I actually did get the GOP to remove me and actually Neil Dewing's phone number from their list to stop getting as many text messages. But apparently, the White House is a separate entity from that, and so they still have my phone number. Which I don't really know what to do about that, but there should be some way to get yourself removed. But I had to literally DM the Republican Party to get my phone number removed from that. If you ever want to get a very, very, like, sincere thank you from Neil Dewing, just get his phone number removed from anything to do with the Republican Party.
Well, that's what you get for being a strong GOP Republican still. You haven't broken away so much from the GOP, and you still get the harassment. It's for Sarah and I, who are, you know, far removed from it, we don't deal with that. Andrea.
No, you know who else doesn't deal with it? My fiance, who changed his phone number the last time that he moved after like a decade, after like 15 years of having the exact same number, and so he wasn't getting any. And I was just like, this is so unfair. Yeah, it was really unfair. But yes, I was harassed all the way up and until the November 6th election. So I'm so glad that that's over with. I'm so thankful, honestly. You know, Kim, you may be saying that that you know it's bad that I'm still part of the GOP because it's my comeuppance that I'm getting text messages, but you know what, maybe I got myself removed by the GOP from their text messages, so maybe they're a good thing still too. I'm just kidding. That's as sarcastic. Sarcastic praise is about all you're gonna get from me. As far as the sarcastic praise is all I can handle at this point.
Are you guys annoyed by the saving Christmas thing too, like the war on Christmas? And I understand some people, I mean, I understand there are certain people in the country who attack the holiday or attack the reason behind it.
Yeah,
I understand that, but I don't think it's as cultural, like, widespread thing to where we have to look to one politician to save it or destroy it. That's dumb.
Yeah, I think we did go ahead, Sarah.
No, I was just going to say it's like there's a reason behind the season, and that is completely unaffected by what any politician does. Like, it's your faith and how you, like, react to that.
Yeah, I think that the whole... This all started when, you know, freedom from religion and things like that, and religious people and even non-religious people. I mean, I'm not religious, but I, you know, the idea of, you know, our town, you know, our, the nearest town to me, Linden, has always, I mean, it's one of those towns that has like 16,000 people and literally has a church in the downtown area, has a church on every single block, you know? And so for them to be, you know, for an outsider group to come in and possibly say, you know, you got to take down the big manger scene light display that's on one of the little greens in the downtown area would be very infuriating to me, because it's like, why should they have to do that? And I think that a lot of people around, you know, when the advent of the 24-hour news cycle, again, I think that a lot of this comes to be out of that people are kind of told, like, oh, you can't even have, you know, Christmas messages on church billboards, you know, because that, oh, we have a right to be free of, you know, it got all tied up in that kind of thing. And I think that where the kind of militant atheist groups kind of got the majority, you know, religious in some way, or at least say they're religious, kind of backs up of a certain part of America that kind of said, hey, what's, you know, why are you attacking this thing that we all kind of don't necessarily have to agree on? I mean, there's plenty of, you know, Jews that celebrate Christmas, or lots of people celebrate Christmas. It's not, for a lot of people, it's not even a religious holiday. It's just the big holiday of the year, and it's a tradition, religious or not. And that's why it's a national holiday and still remains one, despite having.
Yeah, I will say, like, I went to a college that has, I should know this off the top of my head, but I think it has like the oldest chapel in the nation or something like that. And when I was in school there, like a decade ago, which is really weird, there was like a campaign to take the cross off of this chapel. And so, like, I can understand things like that, like trying to remove a religious symbol from a religious building. But, in general, like, for me, like, the whole kick to say, you know, happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas, I see that as just more being respectful of other people's religions and not forcing your religion on them. And then the other thing I'll say is that I find it interesting how we talk about a war on Christmas, and as a feminist, I see a lot of people will make comments about, like, how women in America have it really good compared to women in other countries, and that kind of basically implying women in America can't complain until, like, they are forced to dress a certain way or have rights taken away a certain way, like, in other countries. And I kind of, when I see those comments and when I see the same people talking about a war on Christmas, it just kind of blows my mind that they'd be willing to say that about a war on Christmas when, you know, Christians in other countries are actually being persecuted and like murdered for their faith. And so that does really bother me when I see people criticizing feminists because women in other countries have it worse, and then turning around and talking about a war on Christmas in America when Christians in other countries are like being targeted for their faith.
Right. Apply the same standard across the board is what you want, right?
Like, yeah.
It seems like such a small ask, and yet it's such a big one.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I think, I mean, that's why we have Sarah Quinlan on the show, everyone. And you follow her on Twitter because she's good. And read her writing, by the way. But, I mean, that's a really good point. We're allowed to complain, and thankfully we live in a country that has plenty of freedom and gives us platforms and opportunities to, you know, say what we think about certain issues. I mean, I am fully aware that as an American woman, I have so many more freedoms than most other women in the country, I mean, sorry, in the world. But we are allowed to complain. And yes, it's quite the hypocrisy when people say there's an actual war on Christmas when there's not, nothing widespread or anything. And they have freedom to celebrate the season to the fullest religious extent that they want to. And others who don't want to celebrate it or just want to have some sort of secular view of the holiday, they can celebrate it as much as well. It's like a weird trend from especially the people on the Trumpy side of the Republican Party, how everything has to be the end, the most extreme thing, even on campuses. I understand that conservative speakers have been basically like run off campus, but then there's plenty of times when they're allowed to speak on campus. And I understand that I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, that that college life and stuff and academic life is lopsided on the left side of things. But also when conservatives talk about that, then they believe that pulling themselves out of that situation is the best way to deal with it. When I think conservatives should kind of go into those areas and immerse themselves in those cultures that they think are going to the left and, you know, be a part of the conversation, be a part of the situation, instead of saying, well, everything's horrible and everyone's out to get us. No, immerse yourself in the culture. You know, discuss things with people who are on the opposite side of the aisle. They may just have a different opinion that you disagree with, but it doesn't mean there's a war out, you know, against your beliefs and ideals and your very family. So that's my tangent.
It is something to, you know, we always talk about, you know, social media, and that you do, you curate your life to be basically a echo chamber on Facebook and, you know, Twitter. It's easy to just follow people that you agree with. And then, you know, it's like people always say, why, you know, oh, you should, you know, it's like older family members like, oh, you need to be watching Fox News. I'm like, why would I need to hear, you know, even if I agreed with everything that was on Fox News, I was like, why would I want to hear my own opinion parroted back to me and my own thoughts parroted back to me? It's like what you want is a different thought so that you have to challenge yourself to think critically and logically and decide for yourself whether or not you actually believe something is true or not. I always say that I came out of a very progressive college and in the political science department more conservative than I went in because I was constantly challenged and had to make arguments and play devil's advocate a lot. You know, it's like that's right. What hones you and makes you. And you would think, you know, it's like growing up in church, you always heard that you know, you have to challenge, you have to, you know, understand where other people are coming from. And my younger sister does this, you know, where my interest is in politics, hers is has always been very much on, you know, proselytizing and kind of, you know, being a part of a church and things like that. And she will, you know, always kind of enjoys having conversations with me because I'll like pick part of her, what she's talking about and kind of like, okay, we'll flip it to this. And then so it's always a challenge and you're supposed to challenge, like the way that you become a better person for advocating for your point of view on something is by facing that opposition, not facing no pushback and just having things parroted back to you. It seems so obvious, but
well said.
And actually something that came to me as both of you were talking was, I'm also, I mean, I love Christmas, but I have a really hard time right now with the people who talk about a war on Christmas as, like, Jewish people are literally being, like, murdered at their synagogue. Like, it just leaves a really bad taste in my mouth to hear someone complain about a war on Christmas when, like, people in our country have been murdered in the last month or month and a half alone because of their Jewish faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of.
I think there's definitely a rise a little bit in anti-Semitism. Maybe, I mean, it's always been and always will be. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's a constant in history with anti-Semitism. But yeah, there's, especially with the rise of the alt-right, however small they may be, of small of a, like a little part of the faction on the right, there is a tendency now to disparage Jewish communities and especially people and horribly enough go into synagogues and kill them for their faith. Yep. And so, yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, Sarah, to say that there's a war on your Christian faith and celebrating Christmas, that if you compare it to real life, it's not actually the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you could probably put it into both. It's an odd, it's kind of like the Ben Sasse hatred. It's something that both sides seem to be struggling, but the extremes of both sides, like alt-right and then, you know, a certain, you know, part of the left that kind of always, like, you know, they always talk about on the left, the self-hating Jew and stuff like that. Like, it is something that kind of, like, there's this weird Venn diagram of certain aspects of people that kind of we seem to be dealing with. And like you said, anti-Semitism seems to be the pervasive constant throughout history, where there's ebbs and flows and tides of how bad it is. And, you know, I remember, you know, just being in college or not even in college. I think this was in high school in a history class where we were talking about, you know, when did Jewish people become white? You know, it was that the historic, you know, annihilation of Jews or attempted annihilation of Jewish population has, you know, what in American cultures and things like that, they weren't seen as white, and neither were, you know, neither were Italians for a time. And that now we have this kind of where we think of them as being a privileged class, but it's like, okay, but they're a minority like any other. So, I think I agree with kind of the complaining, aspect of, particularly since Donald Trump has come into office, of kind of this white part of America seeing themselves or thinking that they are on the decline, which when you have a country and a world that is where white is a minority, it's like, why would any country just stay the same color all the time? So I don't know. I don't want people yelling at me for these are just questions. So I hope that everyone listening to this understands that we are having a very, like, open conversation, and one that and like we said at the beginning, one that needs to happen. And we don't all have the answers to this stuff. I know that me at 36 and we're all in our 30s, like, we don't have the answers to everything. And to think that we do is,
yeah.
Would be foolhardy, mm-hmm. at best. So Kim, you had to move along from our Christmas talk. You had a topic that you wanted to touch on that I hadn't even thought of. You know, you guys, Kim, Sarah said that she hadn't even thought about my topic that I wanted to talk about. I had not even thought about your topic that you wanted to talk about this week. So why don't you intro us into that?
Yes, there was a report this week, and I find this pretty interesting because I love campaigns and elections and stuff and just dissecting all that. But there was a report this week. It was actually first came, I believe, out of Vanity Fair, which some people yelled at me in the comment section on Red State for including Vanity Fair. But that's where the original story came from. And you can believe it or not, but that's where it came from. But it is about the 2020 election. And as we know, the Democrats are coming up with this long list, and I think, Andrea, you're doing a spreadsheet on yep. all the Democratic contenders, because there's going to be so many. I mean, have to find someone to compete against Donald Trump, which I'm not sure if they will or not. And either candidate, you know, Democrat or Republican.
I saw somebody say that they expect 40 candidates on the Democratic side.
Learn from our mistakes.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
But this oh, sure. No, but this report was that behind closed doors, President Trump and his advisors have been discussing the 2020 ticket, and I don't believe they've come up with any conclusions or anything, but the discussion has been about whether Mike Pence should stay on the ticket or if he should be kind of kicked off as VP and they should put someone else in his place. And I thought that is just fascinating to me, because for me, someone who doesn't super like Donald Trump and did not vote for him and everything, when someone looks at the Donald Trump Mike Pence ticket, they're like, okay, Donald Trump is crazy and he's a bully and he says all these things, but at least we have Mike Pence and he's kind of a decent man, even if you don't agree with some of his legislation that he did, I mean, signed when he was governor and everything, but he's like the decent part of the ticket. He is what pulls people over to Donald Trump's side, even if they have plenty of questions about the president himself. So that is an interesting part of it. But also, the person that has been kind of floated around as a possible replacement for him has been Nikki Haley, which is also crazy to think about, you know, in terms of her wonderful career, of course, as governor of South Carolina. And then she was UN ambassador, and she ends her role, you know, on that stage at the end of this month. But including her and the president, you know, Trump ticket, what I think would be a mistake, because she has had a stellar career, and she's been obviously she has supported her boss in some things, but she's also talked about how behind closed doors she has disagreed with him, told him that he needs to work on some of his, you know, language and how he talks in the press and everything. So I don't think she should, if this is actually real, I don't think she should accept any sort of VP position. I think she should stay, you know, far away from that. But the idea of replacing Pence, even in the comments section, like I was saying, some people were like, and even on Twitter when I shared this, they said, well, I hope that he wouldn't be replaced because that is the, quote, only thing keeping me, you know, voting for Donald Trump in the future, the fact that Mike Pence is attached to the Trump name. And just in terms of Mike Pence in his future career, whether he stays on for four more years if they win another term, or if he leaves now, or even just after his time in D.C. is done, I think his attachment to Donald Trump has forever, I guess, ruined him. And just the fact that I believe he's a decent man. I really do. I don't agree with, you know, some of his personal positions on things and how he goes about, but I do think he's a decent man. But again, attaching himself to someone who is wildly indecent a lot of the time kind of drags down his name, and I'm not sure if he considers that right now. But I included in my piece something, a report a year ago, that right after the Access Hollywood tape came out, when Trump was still campaigning before the election in 2016, you know, when he said he could grab a woman by her, you know what, mm-hmm. Mike Pence talked to the RNC and said that he could replace Trump as the nominee because he was, you know, so concerned about that. But then he accepts his vice president position, and now he may be, you know, exchanged for someone else. I don't know. It's interesting to me to think about that, and also the effect on his career in the future and anyone who would attach themselves to Trump if this change occurs. So what do you guys think about that?
First of all, I would just say for Nikki Haley, please stay as far away as possible. I don't want her associated more deeply with Trump than she already would be as his UN ambassador. But I'm not a Mike Pence fan, but I think he is the perfect vice president for Trump. And I think you're right, Kim, like he brought voters to the ticket that, like, if Chris Christie had been the vice presidential candidate, that they wouldn't have voted for Trump. And I do think I didn't have a lot of strong feelings on Pence before he became the vice president and candidate. But the way that he has behaved has just really turned me off since. Like, I hated that he used taxpayer funds to fly to an NFL game knowing he planned to walk out at the anthem. I thought that was a really childish mm-hmm. stunt for a vice president to pull. But, you know, his target audience was Trump, and I'm sure it made Trump happy. And I am not a fan of the way that he, in my view, uses religion to cover for Trump. He gave a speech at the Southern Baptist Convention earlier this year. I wrote about it for Red State, so that's why I have these numbers, like, seared in my brain. But he mentioned Trump something like 75 times during his speech, and God or Jesus Christ like 15 times combined. And this is how I think he's the perfect vice president for Trump, in that he is so slick and smooth about how he supports him, and he's openly or publicly very loyal to him. But I've just been so turned off by his willingness to cover for the type of a man that Trump is. And pretty much the Southern Baptist Convention and his speech there just completely turned me away from him forever. So I do agree with you that
he's really
with Trump has pulled him down.
Oh, yeah. I really think he's been the face, if you want to say, of the evangelical wing of the Republican Party. And that's why so many people, like you said, voted for Trump who may have been reluctant to otherwise. Mm-hmm. But I, in a lot of ways, I feel like he has this, like he purposely pulls a curtain between him and Trump, and he kind of puts his fingers in his ears and la, 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 la. I don't understand what's happening or what he's doing or saying. And that allows him to kind of defend him no matter what happens. And it's kind of shocking almost for someone who's very religious, who's completely opposite of, you know, the kind of person Trump is and acts certain ways and doesn't insult people and, you know, doesn't, he's just a better person, you know, by himself, but then attached to Trump, it's like he kind of purposefully ignores it because he knows the position he holds. And I mean, it's frustrating for sure. Andrea, what do you think?
Did we lose Andrea? Her? Are you on mute?
Did we lose her?
I thought I was Andrea? I thought I was unmuted. So obviously I don't know how to read Skype's mute and unmute. So what I was saying, what you guys couldn't hear, is that Trump's major problem is the top of the ticket, not who's mm-hmm. on the second fiddle. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mike Pence, for whatever he's worth to Trump on the ticket, you know, got him into the presidency the first time. The problem is not Mike Pence. The issue for 2020 would not be whoever was vice president. I'm sorry, I don't think that you get over the 2020 hurdle with the popularity deficit that Donald Trump has and his tweets yesterday about Rex Tillerson. I just like, I went from being like, probably not going to vote for him, but I'm going to have to like maybe think about it, to nope, I bookmarked that tweet and I was just like, you know what, if anybody asks me or starts doing the whole 2016 thing again, ask, you know, accusing me of, oh, I want, you know, the one thing that Trump had going for him in 2016 was that the Democrats picked the one person he could beat, and that was a woman with 25 years of hatred behind her, and people who could not stand her, and like I've said over and over again, if the Democrats would have picked Joe Biden, I would have had at least like serious conversation with myself of could I do the Joe Biden thing. Now he's way too, I mean, obviously he's pro-choice, but it would have made me at least question myself rather than a no to her, no to him, you know, like I would have at least gotten, I think Biden would have swept the floor with Trump, and I think the Democrats know that. They made a very bad choice in deciding to put you know, the most qualified candidate ever to run for president up for as the Democratic nominee. You know, I don't think that Bernie
from Vanity Fair. Go ahead. Jump in. The source from Vanity Fair. Well, that spoke to Vanity Fair. Whatever. This is kind of what you're talking about. Why would they replace, you know, Mike Pence? But it said in the article, quote, adding, the advisors presented Trump with new polling that shows Mike Pence doesn't expand Trump's coalition. And then this is what the source said. He doesn't detract from it, but he doesn't add anything either, end quote. So it's like they're trying to find someone who adds a little bit more because it's just a very static line with Mike Pence. But I can't think of anyone who is more decent in the minds of conservatives than Mike Pence. I mean, he's very socially conservative. I can't think of anyone else on the Republican side who would add to the Trump brand. I mean, whatever that means, you know?
And I'm sorry, but I, you know, everybody always talked about how, you know, Sarah Palin was the only thing that made John McCain palatable for a lot of people. That is true. No one was beating Barack Obama in 2008. Nobody. Nobody. No. So it didn't matter who he had. I don't think, I'm a Nikki Haley fan, but I don't care if she's on all that Nikki Haley would do, putting herself, or anybody that I like, you know, I don't care if it's Ben Sasse, Mike Lee, Nikki Haley, pick your person, Mia Love. I don't care who Donald Trump puts on that ticket with him, Donald Trump is still at the top of the ticket, and he is so unpalatable and honestly repulsive to so many people. The fact that the economy is the way that it is and he can barely crack 40%, doesn't bode well. So I think anybody,
Nikki Haley or some other female politician, there's no way that that would pull in more female support for him. I mean, there's no way, because the man has said so much about females and talked about openly treating them in very despicable ways. That's not going to pull female support. It's surely not going to get my vote. It really won't.
And it doesn't hurt her. Yeah, any him, anyone that you like, it hurts that person to accept Donald Trump's the vice president position on the ticket, not helps Donald Trump. That's the thing. I don't think anybody expands Donald Trump's coalition. You know, it will just hurt whoever it is. And Mike Pence is damaged, but that's, you know, that Mike Pence can do with that what he wants to. I mean, Mike Pence was the governor of Indiana. I think before that, wasn't he the senator from Indiana? And he has, you know, political parlay in that he can kind of leave the vice presidency. Not, you know, people aren't paying that much attention to him. I don't know about you guys. I know that, you know, you guys seem to have way more opinions on Mike Pence, but I don't pay attention to him at all. So I'm, you know, I'm kind of sitting back and going like, oh, I didn't even realize all of that. Other than, you know, the fact that he's attached to Trump makes me kind of think that he has, you know, kind of the typical evangelical poor judgment when it comes to Trump. And I say that as someone who loves my family dearly, but they are, you know, deluded about the man. Yeah. So that's for me, that's just where I am on the whole thing, not really paying attention. But I do think that anyone who attaches themselves, should Donald Trump choose to get rid of Mike Pence, is only doing themselves harm. And so who's the person that would not see that other than someone who has nothing else to lose, I guess? Maybe like
someone who
Scott Walker
has on in the last few years. I mean, you know who Trump is.
Which is a lot of people.
Everyone knows who Trump is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Kim, you're right that, you know, and Sarah too, like it would be the worst thing ever for Nikki Haley to take that spot if she was going to, and if she wants to be, you know, president. Yeah. All right. Well, what do you guys, so are we doing, as I started the podcast, are any of us doing New Year's resolutions? Like, are you actually, do you think that they're a good idea or a bad idea? Do you think that there is any like personal renewal of the new year, or is it just kind of like, oh, let's have a party, and then yeah, it's just a day like any other day, like the holidays are over basically? Because that's how I am. I'll put
Sarah,
that out there. That's
think?
my opinion.
I don't know. I go back and forth. I have to admit, I do always kind of roll my eyes when if I'm like going to the gym on January 1st and I see that it's more crowded than it has been in the last 11 months. But I probably will set some resolutions. You guys know I am actually getting married next New Year's Eve, so I have the goals in mind of, like, you know, exercising more so I look my best, and actually taking care of my skin with moisturizer, and you know, then there are some like professional goals, like, you know, this year, or I guess in 2019, I like want to be published in certain publications. So I do like those kinds of aspirational New Year's Eve mm-hmm. or New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, I think those are what, because I know for a fact, like I know someone really well who, you know, made kind of goals for, I think it was 2017, to be published in certain magazines, and publications, not magazines, and all of them kind of worked out. So I think that I think professional goals but those are always good for, you know, any time of year, I guess that's where I kind of like come in, is any time of year, is if you're going to do something, do it now. Like I've mentioned on the podcast a couple of times, like, you know, I decided to kind of, you know, November 9th, I just like suddenly decided, I was like, you know what, I'm going to stop doing things that make me like, that don't make me happy. So it was like drinking and all that kind of thing. So it's like, it was just a random day. It happened to be 2 days before my birthday. So I was just like, oh, I decided to do this for my birthday, but it was mostly just like,
I'm totally one of those people who like I'll set a goal. Like, I'm going to start working on something at 8 o'clock. And if it's like 8:02, I'm like, oh, I can't start for another hour. Or like, I can't like start a new diet in like the middle of the week. I have to, or exercise, whatever. I have to start on Sunday. Like, I don't know if it's like a mental, I don't want to say like OCD, but mental thing where I have to start at like the beginning of something and like get my numbers even, or you know what I mean?
I'm the opposite. If I want to do some sort of like food goal or diet goal, I like to start on like Thursday.
Oh, because that's good.
I know that like Monday is just so very like, I've done the Monday thing. It doesn't work, you know, as well as I, you know, usually think it should. But yeah, I like to do like the Thursday thing. But as far as like resolutions, I don't really have resolutions. I love lists. I mean, one of my favorite things in the world is marking a line through something and putting a little check mark at the end. It's so fulfilling. I just love it. So I love making lists. And so like this year, I'm starting a list of books that I want to get through before the end of next year. And also, of course, places I want to be published. I had a few this year, didn't get through the whole list, but, you know, made a few marks. So I'm pretty glad about that. But yeah, I'm more of a list person and not so much a resolution person. And just because everyone starts on Monday, I'm like, I'm starting on Thursday.
Do you also set your alarm for like 10:42?
I do weird stuff like that. Not good.
Yeah. So I am very much a naturally rigid person like Sarah, like very much like, you know, doing things at certain times with certain intentions. But because of like over the past 15 years, especially the last 10 years of dealing with being so rigid and such a perfectionist, that like it ended up being very, very bad for me in my life of having, you know, not hitting goals and being such a perfectionist that if I couldn't do it perfectly, I wasn't going to do anything at all. So because I'm that type of person and I'm very high strung, I have, you know, with therapy and just like kind of working on myself, like I realized that I can, you know, even if I have, like, if I eat certain bad things, especially, you know, with eating disorder history, like, it's always food related with me, that if I, just because I had, you know, I used to go, oh, well, if I can't start my diet today because it, you know, or I don't diet, but if I can't, you know, start eating well, I might as well just completely ruin this whole day because I ate X. Well, now I've gotten myself, and this takes a lot of work. So anybody who like thinks that you can just suddenly change yourself, no, this is a decade of like intensive work on myself and learning how to do this, that you can, just because you know, if like yesterday I ate 2 of those Ghirardelli chocolate squares and I was like, well, now this day, like I can't get this stuff back. And it's like, no, you have to like teach yourself to think, just because I ate that doesn't mean that I can't start eating better at 9:54, you know, for the rest of the day. So that's something that I had to learn, and it was very difficult and it took a long time, but now I am at that point. I can say, and I'm still not perfect, but obviously I ate 2 Ghirardelli chocolate squares before 9:54 in the morning yesterday, but you know, it is possible to get the rest of your day on track. And I am an all or nothing person. So it's very hard. And so if that's something that like you need to work on for yourself, trust me, I try and do it all the time, and it is very difficult to change certain things about yourself. And it, like I said, it has not been easy making, like, deciding not to do things that make me unhappy, but it's going good, and every day is always makes it a little bit easier, and the more time you get in your rearview mirror of stuff. So that's my New Year's, that's my New Year's like pep talk to all of our listeners. So
all right, subscribe to our show and listen in the new year.
Yes, absolutely. So so Kim, what do you have? Do you have anything big coming up for 2019, or are you just gonna wait and see what happens? Sarah, you're getting married.
Yes, Sarah's getting married. Well, I have my list that I'm going to go through, so I'm probably just plugging along, you know.
Yep. Yeah, so I have no career goals. Mine are mostly just personal goals about just things that to do with myself. And then I'll be like making a big move at the end of January. So that'll be fun. So we might miss a few weekends for that too, Kim. But, yeah. So everybody just enjoy your Christmas. Sarah, do you have anything, a big Christmas sign off that you want to say to anybody or where can, and tell people where they can find you?
Oh gosh. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Sarah M. Quinlan. All the variations of my name were taken, so I had to throw in that middle initial. I write at Red State, and I actually just recently started writing for Arc Digital, which you can follow at Arc Digi, so D-I-G-I. And then for Christmas, obviously, it is my favorite time of the year, but I guess I do also just want to say kind of what you were saying, Andrea, is that I know it can be a hard time of the year for a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just hope everyone has a really good holiday season, I guess.
Yeah, that is kind of the funny thing, right? It's always the happiest time, but then it's always the time that we know people go through because of either whether it's weather or just, you know, missing family or, you know, right, loved ones that are gone. Like people, it's also the saddest time of the year for a lot of people. So mm-hmm. seasonal affective mm-hmm. disorder kicks in, all that stuff. I mean, we all kind of sit around talking about, oh, it's the great, and it is, it's a great time of year. It's also one of my favorite times of the year. It's the only holiday I decorate for. But yeah, so it is one of those things that you always kind of have to keep in mind. It's like what we were saying, this the theme of this podcast seems to be, yes, things can be great, but also keep other people in mind and you yes. know, be empathetic mm-hmm. towards other people. So is that it? Are we at the end, Kim?
We are at the end. But yeah, and I'll do my little sign off too.
Oh yeah.
But as far as Christmas and everything, I actually spoke to a friend in private last week and just the past few weeks, and he actually doesn't enjoy Christmas. And I mean, I love Christmas. I love seeing family. I love everything about it. And he doesn't enjoy Christmas, and seeing everyone else enjoy it kind of puts him in a foul mood. And mm-hmm. digging a little deeper, it's because he has really bad memories of Christmas growing up and his dad and just the dynamic there and everything. So like we were saying, we enjoy Christmas and everything, but it can be kind of a depressing time for some people because of, you know, history and all these things. So, you know, be gentle in your celebration. Not everyone wants you to scream, you know, jingle bells in their face, but I mean, enjoy your mm-hmm. time, but be mindful of other people. But mm-hmm. that's my little PSA. And you can find me on Twitter at Southern Keeks, K-E-E-K-S. You can find me at Red State, at Washington Examiner. And you can also come yell at me on my Facebook page, because plenty of people leave all caps messages on my Facebook page. And that's at Kimberly Ross Ryder. So, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, so you can follow me at Andrea N. Ruth and at Andrea Ruth Page on Facebook. And you can yell at me, but I've been in a mute mood lately, so that's kind of where I am. Now, I was going to piggyback off of something Kim said, but I can't think of what it was, and so I feel really stupid right now. Kim, this is why we have to have an outline. I've decided. It's yes. It's no good without an outline.
Was it about the Christmas thing I said? Was it the Christmas thing?
Oh, I was going to say that there's one account that I follow that every year during the holidays, she completely checks out of social media because it is her least favorite time. She lost her husband over the holidays mm-hmm. one year. And so she just completely signs off of social media because it's just that bad for her. So, I think it's good to remember that, you know, it's not always sunshine and roses, and that it is a new year. And so I always look forward to people coming back for the new year. And then, you know, then Lent comes around and people are gone again. So it's the in and out of the year. So, all right. Well, we'll see you in 2019. Have a happy Christmas and a happy new year. And bye. Christmas,
toys in every store. But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas.